It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 27th episode of Wayne's Comics. Thanks for listening. This week we got some really great interviews. The first one will be with Jeff Kahn from Red Spike, which is a great comic coming out from Image and Benaroya Publishing. I like that book a lot, and he fills in some of the information that I wanted to know about it. Second, we'll have an update with David Miller about Avatar the Futurians, the trade that's coming out for that, and also The Writer's Block, which is also coming out in trade. He's got some good information on that to catch up on those good books. And then, of course, we'll have Ian Cullen and Jean-Luc Glazer talking about news and previews and all kinds of good things in there, so you won't want to miss that. Since we got so much on our plate, let's get to it. I'm talking today with Jeff Kahn, one of the creators behind Red Spike from Image Comics, one of my favorite comics that's out right now. How are you doing today, Jeff?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm glad to have you on here. I love the book. I think it's such a great concept. I just think it's so interesting. The question I always like to ask is, you know, how did you get into comics? Have you been a comics reader for a long time?
Well, I was a reader as a boy, probably till like I was about 12 or 13. And then my interest sort of went in a different direction once I got into high school, you know, more towards basically girls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Baseball cards. I used to collect a lot of comics and stuff. And I remember we moved for about a year. My house was under renovation when I was like maybe 10. And the only thing within walking distance of the place we were staying was a comic store, like the only thing reasonable for a 10-year-old. And so I went there a lot. And that was when the Death of Superman issues were coming out.
Oh, okay.
So that was a big time. And that kind of got me into them. And my grandmother was giving me Spider-Man comics from the time I was a kid. She subscribed me to it. So Growing up, I had a lot of comics around. And one of my cousins who I was particularly close with when I was younger is a huge comic fan still to this day. So we would, you know, talk about comics or, you know, read each other's comics or whatever. And then I sort of got back into them, you know, in college again, mm-hmm. and sort of started reading them some and, you know, haven't since.
What was it that happened in college that got you back into them?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess there were a number of sort of trades that came out that were really interesting, mm-hmm. that people liked, you know, that were among my circle of friends people would be talking about. And just sort of, I guess, getting there were a lot of just people sort of from different parts of the country and stuff like that who had sort of different tastes in comics rather than sort of the homogenized taste at my high school, I guess, that sort of plays, I guess, in any sort of institution like that. Usually people sort of tastes and stuff get normalized to sort of a middle ground a lot of times, especially when you're younger like that. So I think it was just getting re-exposed to them and sort of seeing sort of the edgier ones, because I wasn't really looking at, you know, stuff like Watchmen and things like that as a 12-year-old. Mm. It was more, you know, sort of popcorn-y bubblegum comics. And so seeing the edgier side of comics really brought me back into them.
Cool. I had something of a similar experience. I actually dropped out around when I got around to college because I was just way too busy to read them. And then when we got off to later than that, I'll tell you how much older I am than you. That was the new Teen Titans that brought me back into them. I started buying one. I bought that. And then before long, I bought a couple more. And then I got to the place where they said, if you had a couple comics, you could get a discount. So I slowly built back up, and now I kind of buy a lot. I'm gonna buy all the new 52 from DC. So I'm sort of an addict, I guess.
Yeah, I was hearing they have some promotion if you buy all 52, or maybe that's just at the comic stores around LA.
Yeah, well, it's different stores are doing different things, so it's kind of interesting. But all this stuff kind of interests me. I always like to know what it is that gets people into it, and that leads me to my next question: is what made you decide you wanted to go and actually create comics?
Well, the story we had with Red Spike, we thought was well-suited to become a comic. Mm-hmm. And so from there, once we decided that we wanted to do it, we knew some guys who were already working in comics and who had been around the business. And so I think just from wanting to do the comic, then we started talking to people who we knew, who knew about comics. And then they hooked us up with connections to artists and people like that. And we were able to bring it all together.
Mm-hmm. Now, where did the concept of Red Spike come from?
And maybe you should explain a little bit what it's about.
Well, Red Spike is basically the name of a super soldier program, as well as this system that they install in the participants in the program that essentially lets people produce and disperse massive amounts of adrenaline. Mm-hmm. So it essentially gives soldiers a turbo button in the heat of combat. So their fight or flight responses are really, really increased, augmented, basically. So that's sort of the general idea of the system, so that someone with this in them could go do the work of 5 or 10 elite soldiers. So they're like the elite of the elite, plus they're on the soldier equivalent of kind of like steroids. Mm-hmm. I have been working with Michael Benaroya, who is the founder and the head of Benaroya Publishing, which is the label that Red Spike is published under under the Image imprint as well. Mm-hmm. And he had an idea for basically an adrenalized super soldier, mm-hmm. which is what adrenalized is sort of the term that we've been using for these guys getting all jacked up on adrenaline. From there, he pitched me that concept. He sort of let me run with it. From that concept is where Matt came, mm-hmm. who is sort of the white hat in the script. He's kind of the good guy, sort of the holds the party line. From playing around with him and playing around with different stories, you know, then we develop Greg, who's sort of the darker of the characters. And from there is just sort of figuring out what is the best way to get everyone into the story and to sort of introduce the world in an interesting way to show what these guys are capable of. And basically what is sort of a good introductory story to this world and this idea. And this is the one that we settled on. And we have other stories that now that we're actually into the world, hopefully we'll get a chance to tell them as well, sort of going further down the line in the chronology and even perhaps before we're actually in linear time where Red Spike picks up. But yeah, basically, I had been working with Michael and he had this idea and he came to me with it and we figured out a good story for it and then went from there.
It's interesting. I'm going to be fascinated to see more about what's going on in this. Regarding the two male characters, I find them interesting because they're very different from each other. You know, they've gone through this program that's very demanding on them, and yet they are still two very different individuals, and that's what brings the conflict to come between them eventually. I really like that about that they weren't really the same characters, that somebody could go through those processes and yet be very different individuals. I like that.
Yeah, I'm glad you like that. We thought that if they were both, you know, sort of your good guy, then it's not very interesting. And if they're both sort of your bad guy, then it's also not quite as interesting. But what also I kind of, you know, find engaging about them is they managed to get along sort of, but they would never be friends outside of this program. Mm-hmm. And even though that they're still only the two people in the whole world who've gone through this program, there's still some lack of full embracing of the other one. Mm-hmm. Greg thinks that Matt is kind of a goody two shoes and Matt thinks that Greg is kind of a punk. Mm-hmm. And even though that they have to work as a team, there's still a lot of friction.
Mm-hmm. Well, they come from very different backgrounds.
Right.
Are you from a military family? Because you seem to, and I'm not, but you seem to understand the military mindset a lot better than some do.
Well, I'm not. I went to a pseudo military high school. It wasn't a real one, but it was, you know, an all boys with strict uniform codes and stuff. But it was hardly a military school. But I just sort of, I guess, try to look at, just sort of think about what it would be like. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I guess that's what any writer tries to do. And then you just sort of try to imagine sort of the day-to-day conflicts and the situations and circumstances that people find themselves in when they're in a military family or whatever it may be. And then kind of go with it. This was after it. We did a signing down at Miramar base and met a lot of people who are actually in the military and their families. And that was really interesting. I mean, Red Spike 3 was already out by then, so that didn't really affect the writing, but it was just a good experience, I guess, you know.
Well, it says something that people who, you know, if you're talking about the military and people in the military can relate to it, that's a good sign.
yeah, that is.
Because so many don't do that. I read stories about the military and I see these things and a lot of the times it doesn't make sense to me. You know, it's like if you go on Star Trek, you've got the crazy admiral who's trying to do strange things and those kinds of things drive me insane because, you know, by the time you get to an admiral, you're probably pretty much not a crazy person any longer. You're part of the system and you understand what it takes to make things go. And so these things always drive me nuts. But this actually feels to me like a very realistic situation and I like that.
Good. I'm glad you found it that way.
I'm kind of interested because it doesn't sound like you talked to anybody who was in the military. You imagined what it is, and it turned out to be reasonably correct. Because, for example, on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Avery Brooks, who was playing Captain Sisko, he actually went to military people and found out how they acted, and then he brought that to his character. So I was just wondering if that was the case with this. It doesn't sound like it was.
Not in the direct way like that. Like, I didn't go, you know, to people in the military and was like, okay, I'm doing this project. Like, here are my questions. But I, you know, a lot of things that interest me have to do with the military. So I read a lot about it, and I've read, you know, a lot of books and a lot of just general news articles about guys in the military and sort of their thoughts on the world and things like that. So, I hope I just internalized some of those things and was able to express it in the comic.
Well, it does sound like you did good research on it, though, to make sure that it was accurate.
Yeah. I mean, most of my research came in the form of researching the human adrenal system. So figuring out how fight or flight responses are triggered, what the chemicals are, and sort of trying to find a way to make it kind of plausible that this thing might work. Because I felt that that was something that was also important if we want to have that air of espionage and that air of sort of like maybe somewhere in the depths of the Pentagon, this is actually going on. Mm-hmm. It had to be something kind of reasonable that almost, you know, you could almost believe or even you could if you, you know, let your imagination wander a little bit that this is something doable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you're probably getting tired of the Captain America comparison by now, because, you know, the one thing I find this so much more believable than Captain America is that Captain America gets one shot and his metabolism is forever changed. This right. to me seems to be so much more realistic in the sense that, you know, you can't really do that to a bot, because, you know, a shot will get in there and it'll alter it for a while, but eventually that stuff gets out of the system and you're back to where you were. But this, I like this notion of the adrenaline being able to do that, because this is something that I can see, you know, happening actually.
Yeah. And it's the sort of thing too where it's a double-edged sword with that, because, you know, after you expend all this adrenaline, you're a little sluggish, you're a little weaker after that. And, you know, also it's sort of, as you go along reading the issues, you see that there's some sort of psychological effects to it that are sort of unintended. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, every science is discovering these things. You know, you find things out that you didn't know by doing it. It's like where the stick-it notes came from. They were doing something else, and that happened to come as part of it. So it's always something that's interesting to learn, because it never quite turns out the way that you expect 100%. But, you know, as somebody who lives in the Washington, D.C. area, I was particularly, you know, enjoying the notion of them in the Lincoln Memorial, and then one of them picks up the head of Lincoln and is throwing it at the other.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was, you know, that hit me really close to home, because, you know, it's very close to where I live. How did that come to be part of the story? Was that, you know, how did that happen?
I was conceiving of Red Spike as set sort of in the D.C. area, like their secret base in the boondocks around D.C., where they could sort of be close to Langley and be close to that, to all the action, but not, you know, but be far enough away that prying eyes couldn't really see what they were up to. Mm-hmm. And so then from there, when I was sort of developing the story and we decided that we were going to have a big blowout between Matt and Greg, we just started trying to think of what would make cool images that the artist could really sink their teeth into. Mm-hmm. And I basically came up with that because I like I think that it makes a really great image. Like the cover, I think, is really great. And the splash page inside, I think, is really great. And I just like the idea of them, of it being Lincoln, because there's a lot of, you know, he carries a lot of symbolism and a lot of heft as far as just sort of what Lincoln stands for and what comes to mind when we think of him. And these guys sort of being in the U.S. military, I sort of like the idea. But, you know, they're in it and they're fighting, you know, for our freedom, but they're not free themselves in a way. So I just sort of like the idea of using Lincoln, because he sort of is the presidential embodiment of the United States as an institution, sort of standing for freedom and an end to slavery and things like that. So I just like sort of the symbolism of them, of these guys who are both slaves to the institution and sort of partners in the institution using this symbol.
I was reading an interview that you did for a website, and I noticed one of the things you were talking about was that you actually respect the military, but it's politicians that you don't quite have that much respect for, which I came away with. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
We can. I think that's probably, especially at this point, something that is fairly common view in this country. I think pretty much everyone, regardless of what side of the political spectrum that you're on, views, and I mean, I guess, and I could be wrong about this, but views, you know, the actual men and women who are, you know, serving day in and day out with a lot of respect and to, you know, and awe and thanks. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the animosity comes from, you know, people not thinking that their services and their talents and their lives are being used in the right way when we go off on and do some of these sort of misadventures halfway across the world. Mm-hmm. So it's not the soldiers who get us into that. It's those are political decisions and political calculations. Mm-hmm. And politicians are not operating on what's best. I mean, in my view, they're not operating on what's best for the country and what's best for the military. They're trying to figure out, how do I get reelected? How do I raise a bunch of money this quarter so that I can run my house race, which I have to do every 2 years, or so I can get reelected president or whatever it may be. So I just think that in some ways, you know, you have people who are volunteering to be in the military and to put their lives on the line for our country, and the politicians aren't taking their commitment and their sacrifice seriously by making these mistakes, basically. I mean, and I think mistakes is a very light way of putting it.
In the book, we see that while these two are actually fighting it out, there's all this political wrangling going around.
Right, right, exactly. The people wrangling politically, they don't care. What they're interested in is these petty feuds they have between one another, or maintaining their own power or aggrandizing their own power. They couldn't care less what it's doing to the people under them. And that's sort of the impression that I really get from pretty much every branch of our government at this point. I mean, it doesn't really seem like they couldn't care less about essentially poor 20-year-olds dying in Afghanistan or Iraq or things like that. For what? You know, I don't know. We don't really have answers to what we're still doing in those places at this point. So
that's one of the things I really like about the book, is it's actually dealing with an issue. Oftentimes comics, as much as I love them, it's, you know, you're fighting your uncle's sister twice removed on your cousin's side or something. And it's not stuff that I can relate to, but this is actually dealing with an issue. You get the conflict, but you're also seeing this discussion going, you know, being played out. And that's one of the things I really enjoy about the book. I like that a lot.
I'm good. Now, obviously, Red Spike isn't going to change the world or anything, but I like that it is provoking some thought about these issues, because, I mean, it's been a decade. So, and a lot of my philosophy about sort of my worldview on this stuff was formed. I was a senior in high school when 9/11 happened, so I wasn't really following politics and things like that up until right around then. You know, I got, like, you know, once I got to college and I became a little bit more aware of what was happening politically. And of course, I went to college in Southern California. It was very left wing sort of place. So the second you got there, you know, it was very, you know, anti-Bush, da 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 da. Not that I think he's what he's done is defensible or anything, but it just got me. But I grew up in New Orleans, which, you know, New Orleans itself is a fairly moderate place, but a lot of, you know, my high school was very conservative. It was a Catholic high school. And so it was sort of, I got one point of view really hard for a while and then the other one. So, and then, you know, it was all this 9/11 stuff was going on, and then the invasion of Iraq and this and that. So I just sort of have an inherent distrust of people in power.
You know, this is the kind of discussion I think we need to be having, and I'm glad it's a comic that's doing it, to be honest with you. So that's great. So now, what's the latest issue that's come out? Is 3 the last one that's come out?
No, 4 came out, I believe, August 10th, and 5 should be coming out in probably the second Wednesday of September. And so hopefully we'll be able to do some more, because we have some other stories that are good, and that I feel like we're sort of just really scratching the tip of the surface of this. And this more, you know, like the fifth issue, there's a big twist at the end that sets up future ideas and issues. So I'm hoping we'll have another shot to do a couple more. But
are there plans to put it into a trade?
I believe we might do that. I haven't heard any definitive answer one way or the other, but we've definitely been entertaining the thought of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we started talking, I tossed a question at you. It's interesting, because comics are sort of a male-dominated medium, although that's changing. I see a lot more women reading it, and I was just sort of curious. I was posing the question to you before, what if this had been a man and a woman, or two women? You know, it would be a very different story.
Yeah, it would be. I don't know how it would have played out with two women. I think certainly there's that machismo element that would be toned down quite a bit. But, you know, I wonder, and I don't have the answer to this, but I think that women have more pronounced fight or flight responses than men. I think they do, which is why you have stories of, like, mothers lifting cars to get their baby, right, and stuff like that. So that might actually be something interesting, because if you have a woman who can have this system and she has a much more drastic or dramatic response, she might actually be able to contend with a man, you know, because, so I don't know, it could be interesting. It would also, I think, be interesting to sort of play with the idea of sort of like feminization and superpowers, like, because they're usually considered, you know, like, you're super strong. That's sort of like a masculine trait, to, I feel like, not that women can't be strong or whatever, but like, if you hear like, oh, so-and-so with super strength, like the first thing you think of is the Hulk or whatever.
Well, this is what keeps me awake at night. I think about these kind of things.
But that's something, you know, that's something interesting. And that, you know, maybe if we get another few more issues, we'll see what we can do with that, work it in some.
I'm just fascinated by it because, you know, I'm curious about these kinds of things. And this is the kind of, again, this is, your book has provoked all this kind of thought in me. What if this was this way? What if this was that way? And so I really enjoyed it because of that. And I think I highly recommend it to people. It's such a good book. You'll come away really thinking afterwards. It's not just something that visually entertained you for a little while. It gets you thinking. And I like that so much about it.
Oh, I'm really glad. I really appreciate that. I think it's great that you've found it so, you know, such a rewarding reading experience, because that's sort of what we want to set out to do, something that was both, you know, entertaining and thought-provoking, and didn't sort of treat the guys who are in this situation lightly, sort of handle them in a real way that gets people sort of thinking about them and humanizing them and stuff. So,
well, I definitely want more. So I'm hopeful that we will see Red Spike 2 or whatever else the second runner will be. I really want to see that.
Yeah, I would love to. I hope we can do it as well. So.
Now, have you got any other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of?
Yeah, I am working on this book that's called The Redeemer right now, mm-hmm. And that should probably be out. You know, we're shooting to have it out end of the year, but it might be sort of the start of 2012. And the way that I've been describing it to people, sort of the one sentence description, is it's The Crow set in Deadwood. So basically, a more detailed explanation is that there's this small sort of village in the middle of nowhere in the desert in the Old West. Mm-hmm. And this sort of mysterious stranger, it comes into town, mm-hmm. and he tells the people that he's found gold in the hills. Mm-hmm. And then he wants to start mining it, and all the people want to start mining it. But there's a preacher in town, and he runs a small church, mm-hmm. but it's sort of the backbone of the town. And he and his congregation basically are like, we don't want you to invite a bunch of miners in, mm-hmm. to our town and basically turn this place into a mining camp. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the town is against him. And so basically the stranger persuades people to kill the preacher. So they lock him, and his followers in the church and burn it down.
Wow.
And then he rises from the dead to sort of retribution. Yeah.
Now, that's not your average story.
No, I mean, it's so hopefully it'll be cool. I mean, I've been working on it for a while, and it's finally, you know, really, I think we're at the level where now we have the story all solved, and we're just sort of trying to take it up to the next level of it being just like super entertaining and really just a really fun ride.
Is this going to be also from Image, just under Benaroya?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Who's going to be the artist, you know?
I think it might be Nam Kim. I'm not sure yet, but I think so. He did Samurai's Blood, which is another Benaroya title. Mm-hmm. And his art is really great. So, you know, he and I have been talking, exchanging emails about it. So hopefully he'll be fully on board.
Cool. Anything else?
That's the only other comic I have in the pipeline right now. But I'm hoping that we can either, you know, do another Red Spike or another, you know, Redeemer. We sort of have set up so that it can be more than a 5-issue run as well. So hopefully there will be some other stories, because now, you know, it's fun to write comics as a writer, because you sort of get to play director, mm-hmm. too. So, you know, you get to sort of help with the images and sort of help with things like that, and have input in a way that you definitely don't in other mediums. So it's been really like creatively rewarding to work on these comics.
I'll bet. You know, you could probably go and do some directing after you've done some of this stuff, because you've gotten some idea on how to do that now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be great. But, you know, we'll see, I guess. Okay.
All right. Well, it was good talking with you, Jeff. I wish you much success. Like, again, the book is Red Spike. Be sure to, if you haven't picked it up yet, go back and find the back issues. They're really worth it. So thanks for talking with me today, Jeff.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's been great talking.
Well, same here. Right now, I want to update David Miller, who's been on this podcast several times in the past, and a comic book person who's created books of his own, including Avatar the Futurians. How are you doing, David?
Oh, great. How are you, Wayne?
Good. Now, I understand you've got some news about Avatar the Futurians you want people to know about.
It's a changing world out there in the publishing industry, and I'm trying a different tact on making sure that this book can get to the people who want to read it, because as you know, one of the bigger problems being a self-publisher is distribution. And, you know, just because Diamond carries something doesn't mean stores are going to carry it, even if people order it. Mm-hmm. One of the recent evolutions in publishing is the print-on-demand model. The title of this book, the collection of the Avatar the Futurian comic, is actually going to be called Dave Cockrum's Futurian Avatar. And it is being hosted on createspace.com, which is a print-on-demand service. So if 10 people want it, then 10 orders are printed up. Or if 1,000 people want it, 1,000 orders are printed up, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm really excited to get the word out and see how this model works. This model has worked quite well for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. That's just the beginning. I'm already starting to collect into trade format other books in my inventory, and I want to talk about that a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're also, I understand, doing writer's block. Maybe you should tell people a little bit, because I think people have a general idea about what the Futurians are about. But writer's block, some folks may not be as familiar with. Why don't you explain what that was like?
Oh, thanks. Writer's block was my little literary experiment with comics. And it sprung from the mid to late 90s, what I call the image era, in that it looked to me like writers were being shoved to the side to make way for the writer-artist. If anyone just called themselves a writer-artist, it seemed like they got a free ride, because there are very good writer-artists out there. Mm-hmm. But there are some that seem to have the shelf space that writers who've been working for years, if not decades, and I thought that the output wasn't as good as it could be, to be charitable. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have a spotlight for good comics writers. Mm-hmm. So what I did, I had a few connections and people who did me favors out of the kindness of their hearts. My first issue featured the works of Jim Shooter, Roy Thomas, and Mike Barron. Mm-hmm. And what the format is I give three writers the same 6 pages of art and don't tell them anything about it. And they just look at it and they just go with it. And whatever story comes to mind, they write for it. Mm-hmm. Then you're able to compare and contrast different writers' style and strengths and approaches. And we have a little Q&A in each issue to discuss how they approach the problem. But really, I don't think the Q&A was even needed because it was there. It was on the page. I wouldn't call this a how-to, like how to write comics, but seeing people do their job is almost a better way than telling people how they do their job, mm-hmm. in my mind.
Well, the one I enjoyed the most is with Mark Waid. You had the artwork that had like 2 pregnant women, sort of like women warriors, and they were fighting each other. And Mark Waid came up with the notion that the 2 children inside were actually like grown adults and were actually fighting through their mother's bodies. And one was called Malembryo, which I always thought was a great bit of writing on his part. But, Mr. Waid is creative, if nothing else. And I like those. Are all the issues that you did going to be in the trade?
Yes, including the one that got no distribution, issue 3. Issue 2 had the great offerings by Mark Waid, Roger Stern, and Joe Duffy. Mm-hmm. And issue 3, I am so glad they'll finally see broad distribution, had Gail Simone, Peter David, and Fabian Nishiza.
Mm.
And so that's 9 different really strong writers, and writers I'm a fan of. That was part of the criteria, was 1, ideally they're good, they're published, mm-hmm. They have a reputation, but also I like them. mm-hmm. That was part of it. But not only do I reprint the stories and the question and answers, but I also print or publish the scripts, mm-hmm. and also their word balloon placement notes, which is the prints of the pencils with their little notations where each balloon goes. Mm-hmm. So I think that gives a pretty broad range of the one-time Marvel method, which mm-hmm. by and large isn't done anymore, but still it'll seep in every now and then depending on the writer. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about how it looks. I mean, it's 128 pages, mm-hmm. I believe. Mm-hmm. Now this is available for anyone who wants it, and you don't have to go to your comic shop. We can make the website available where they can order directly from CreateSpace, and it can also be searched through Amazon. So if you're more comfortable doing that, the customer can do a search on Amazon. Unfortunately, CreateSpace does not have a searchable site. You have to know the website.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can help me get that dispersed.
A question I've got for you about writer's block, because I remember writer's block, it's black and white. Is the trade still going to be black and white?
Yes, it's going to be, reprinted the way it was originally printed.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience is the work of the writers, and I've been flipping through it, and so I'm really happy. I'm really happy how it's come together.
Cool. Well, I'm going to definitely go after them. Now, as far as the Futurians and stuff goes, I remember you had the contract with the Cockrum family for that for a while. What's your involvement with that in the future?
Before I say that, I just want to point out that the collection does have a little extra perk to it,
mm-hmm.
Along with the entire 4-issue series,
mm-hmm.
detailing the Avatar of the Futurian storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I also got the rights to reprint for the first time in color one of the last Futurian stories. It's a 5-page short story by Dave Cockrum, and they did with Clifford Meth, put the scripter on that,
mm-hmm.
and the co-plotter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a little something extra going on.
Mm-hmm.
As far as my connection or my future with the Futurian, that would involve some more negotiation between myself and the Cochran estate. I think that they will probably have their own plans for the property.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can be slipped in between the cracks, mm-hmm. where I wouldn't get in their way,
mm-hmm.
and they would be okay with that, mm-hmm. I would love to continue doing it, especially now that we have this new way of printing mm-hmm. on demand so that it wouldn't put me in the hole public in printing costs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to complain, but I'm thinking, wow, I'm trying to publicize these events on a probably about 4 weeks where all of the comics press is pointed at 52.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting time to be launching another publishing enterprise.
It's ironic because just a few weeks ago on the SFP Now podcast, we had Michael Jan Friedman, and they've started up something very similar to this, the Crazy Eights Press. And they are, him and Peter David and some other folks are all getting together because the same thing that you are, it's difficult to get these books into the hands of the people who want to actually get them. And so they've done basically the same thing, except that they've organized themselves into like a publishing group. Is this still considered like under David Miller Studios, what you're doing?
Oh, yes, what I'm doing, yes.
Okay. So yeah. you're doing something similar to what they're doing. I think we're going to see a lot of those kind of sprout up as people who still want the paper copy. And I think that's going to be a long time before the paper copies go away. But as long as people can access them and want to get a hold of them through you, then that's a good thing, because if it's worth your while, then you can continue to do these kinds of things.
Yeah, at one point I thought the future would be that people would buy some kind of device. It's like a printer,
mm-hmm.
but it prints out your comic, staples it, and folds it, and gives it to you. So basically, like print on demand, like CreateSpace and others that I've read about, mm-hmm. they do that for you. It's kind of the same and better for everyone, because no one wants to buy all that hardware.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's funny what you say, though, about paper not going away, because clearly you've been reading this week how DC and Marvel are doing a big push on their digital initiatives.
Right.
But it's funny because I just got contacted by a fellow who was referred to me because he wants to do his own comic book and wants to partner with a publisher. And I'm thinking, wow, I mean, no matter what you say, there's still these guys out there that are probably going to put up a lot of their own money and do it traditionally, because that's still the familiar format.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
No matter how many people say, I mean, this guy, I'm gonna talk to him and try to help him out. But this guy is clearly contacting me because he wants to have a printed product that rolls off a printing press, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny. It's like, it's not dying anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be interesting to see how it survives.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not just a done deal that it's going to be digital, we'll save it. I think there are going to be some other avenues created.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Oh, I do. I think the digital thing is starting to happen, because as you and I have talked about before, when I have not been able to get a paper copy, like let's say there's a book that's out and I've got issue one and issue three, but I can't get two, but I can find it online, I can get a digital version of it. I will do that so that I know what the story is, so I can continue to go back and buy the paper copies. But, you know, not everybody's doing that. Some people are only going digital. And that's one of the things that DC's in the middle of doing right now. They're trying to have the digital versions come out at the same time that the paper copies come out. And there are a lot of people who use different electronic devices who want to be able to read them on those devices. So it's an interesting time. I mean, we're in the middle of a transition, but I don't think it's going to be a quick transition. It's not going to be like it was from album to CD. I don't think it's going to be overnight. All of a sudden, all the albums are going to go. I think the paper copies are still going to be in demand. And it's ironic to me, because Justice League number one now is actually coming out in a third printing, and that has absolutely nothing to do with the digital version. That has to completely do with those people who are trying to collect paper copies. And I don't see those going away anytime reasonably soon, because the only difference of a digital copy is, let's say, the pages are different. Something's happened on the inside and you need an updated PDF. But it's not that way. You know, I don't think those are going to change. I think what's going to happen is the paper copies are still going to be collectible, at least for a little while.
Well, it's like that old saying of no one can predict a hit or predict how to make a hit. It always seems to come out of the left field.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone's been like saying, okay, digital is going to save comics.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that being a little too short-sighted. There are other options, and apparently they are evolving and coming out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the next couple years is going to be very, very interesting.
I wonder if the day will come when we actually don't go to the comic book stores anymore, that we just download our PDFs on the web. I don't see that happening right away, but I think in the future, I think it will be that way. And it's kind of a sad thing because paper copies are such wonderful things. You know, I sit there, I turn the light on, I pull the book out and I start to read it, you know. And digital versions, you have to be sitting at a computer. You can't do any different kinds of ways. You must have a computer screen in front of you in order to be able to see it. And I think that takes away some of the joy of reading a paper copy, unfortunately.
Yeah. Your question, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. You said, will we be reading it? It's just a PDF? Mm-hmm. Yeah, possibly. But also, people may not go to comic shops because they'll just order it online mm-hmm. and have it delivered. Why save the money of gas? Mm-hmm. And just as some people say, okay, there's a generation that's growing up reading digital. Mm-hmm. Yes. And there might be a generation growing up just reading the trade. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a customer base that's willing to wait for the trade, then you get in where printing is cost-effective, mm-hmm. or at least more cost-effective. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's things going on that people just aren't considering, and myself included. Some of the things I'm saying, I just kind of came up with tonight while we're talking. Mm-hmm. It just extrapolates from what I'm suggesting. Mm-hmm. Anything that makes comics possible, mm-hmm. I'm in favor of.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we go ahead and wrap this up? Why don't you go ahead and tell us again the names of the books and how we can access them?
Let's see. If you want to order them from CreateSpace directly, which I would like, but I'll put those links up on my website, www.futurians-avatar.com. Mm-hmm. And if you want to do a search on Amazon, they will come up on that. And the names of the books themselves so far is Dave Cockrum's Futurian, Avatar, mm-hmm. and The Writer's Block, Writing Comics for Love and Money. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that will feature the talents of Jim Shooter, Mike Barron, Roy Thomas, Mark Wade, Gail Simone, Roger Stern, Joe Duffy, Fabian Yasiza, Peter David. I think that's all nine of them.
Okay.
And one more I'm going to be putting together for the children's market is my homage to Johnny Quest, Cliff Diver, Professional Teen Cliff Diver. That's now, another three-issue series being collected.
Right. Now, CreateSpace, is that .com?
Yes.
Okay, so CreateSpace, and it's spelled like the word sounds like, create, and then the word space.com. So in case people will need to go there. Now, does it work better for you if they go through your site, or does it make a difference?
Well, the thing is, as far as works better for me, it works better for me for it to be ordered through CreateSpace. Mm-hmm. The problem is CreateSpace does not have a searchable site.
Okay, so you have to know specifically what to get.
Yeah.
So it's better if they go through your site because you'll have a link directly to those the trades.
Yes, and I need to put that up there. So I will do that very soon.
Okay. But it's good talking with you, David, as always. We'll have to talk with you again sometime in the near future, but I wish you much success with this. I know I've enjoyed both of those.
Oh, thank you. And hey, I look forward to talking to you again about anything comics related. I know there's a lot of stuff going on, and I'm sure it's almost too much to cover.
Have you had a chance to read any of the New 52 so far?
I have read Justice League and I have read Action.
Okay.
And Action, of the two, I like the best. But how can you not? It's Grant Morrison doing Superman.
Yeah, that's true. It's hard to pass him by because he's really good stuff. Okay, Dave, it's good talking with you, and we'll talk with you again sometime soon.
Very good. Thank you.
It's week two of the New 52, and with me with news and previews, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing well.
Good, well, that's good. And Ian Cullen.
Yeah, good and well.
Ian Cullen, how are you, Ian?
I'm good. I'm just peeing in my face with potato peeler at the moment.
Okay, no more Detective Comics references. We've got to, we want that to be a big surprise when people get to that. As far as news goes, I know, Gianluca, you were mentioning, we were recording for the other podcast, that there was an article you wanted to talk about. So why don't you bring that up?
It's really good. It's on Comic Book Resources. It came up like a couple of days ago. And it's an interview with like the heads of like Dark Horse. You have Mike Richardson. You have Ross Ritchie from Boom. You have Ted Adams from IDW. You have one of the guys from Dynamic Forces, you know, Dynamite Comics. And they're all basically talking about in terms of marketing and sales with the new DCU, you know, in the month of September specifically. And a lot of the guys, you know, kind of like say kind of the same thing and are in agreement. A lot of them, when asked if they, you know, suffered like any drops in orders for the month of September, you know, none of, like, maybe Dynamite might have been, like, the only one that may have admitted that they may have had, like, fewer sales. But everybody, especially Dark Horse, you know, noted that, no, we didn't have any change at all. We had the same, you know, big titles that we planned on bringing out regardless, you know? And I want to say Dynamite again, but I think Dynamite was kind of honest in saying that, you know, DC was pretty close to the vest with, like, this kind of plan. And by the time the news kind of leaked, you know, it was too late for anybody to kind of make changes in their preview plans, you know, in that case. But it's a really good article. You know, people, you know, like the interviewer asked them about, like, crossover kind of events in terms of that. And other questions, too, involving, like, did they ever consider pushing back some of their titles into October or November to make room? There's another good question in terms of, does this bring new customers in? Is this going to, like, you know, bring in more orders for, like, the other companies besides DC? And again, a lot of the people, like, answered kind of the same way. But I remember one person was particularly honest in saying that, you know, it's a case of, yeah, it's going to bring in new people, but it's only going to bring in people wanting DC stuff, you know. Those people, those new customers that come in because of this new, you know, marketing from DC, they're not going to shop around. You know, they're in there specifically for a purpose, and they're going to come in there and leave. And there's not going to be a lot of crossover, but what other publishers kind of have to do is they have to create their own kind of buzz and their own kind of excitement as well and kind of capitalize off of this.
It's interesting you should bring that up because on Facebook, Sean Aldridge, who I know and I've interviewed on Wayne's Comics podcast about his book, Vic Boone, he recently, and this is public, it was out on Facebook, so I don't think I'm spoiling anything, but he said he was very disappointed when he got his numbers back for issue number 3. He was sort of thinking, well, he's not going to be able to publish this anymore unless he puts it all into a trade, that he's not going to do individual issues anymore because he doesn't think he can afford it. And Raphael Moran, who does Dreamweavers, was saying something of the same thing. Also somebody I've interviewed on the podcast. And he was saying that he was disappointed with some of the numbers that were coming in for upcoming issues. So the bad news is that, I think you're right, is that, yeah, this is a lot of hubbub. It's getting a lot of attention and it's helping DC tremendously. But on some levels, it's also hurting some of the smaller independent books.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're into superheroes too, I imagine like a lot of the non-superhero type publishers like Dark Horse probably didn't affect them too much. But it'll be interesting also to see how big the market has grown, you know, when we get like those September sales numbers, you know, and compare them even to August when those come out and just see, you know, is it just a shift between people dropping Marvel and going to DC? Or how big of a, you know, how big of an extra market are we getting because of the people going to DC?
See, that's going to be the make or break thing as far as this goes. You know, because when I remember when Dark Knight Returns first came out, it must be 20 years ago now, there was this mass exodus into the bookstores from, because there was an article in Rolling Stone magazine about it. And so there was a big influx and it lasted as long, I think, as the book did. But once the book was over, then it went back to regular stuff. And I have to wonder, you know, once the new 52 is not the new thing anymore, it's sort of the old 52. Are we still going to have these new people coming in? I mean, you're bagging and boarding and other people are bagging and boarding. And I'm just curious, you know, once the collectability factor goes down, what's going to happen as far as people going in and buying the books?
Absolutely. Are people going to be coming in for issue 5, you know?
Yeah, that's the key. Ian, have you heard anything? I know that you don't actually go to the store, but, you know, you keep your ear to the internet. So have you heard much about any of these kinds of things as far as the UK goes?
Not really, no. But I've just had a thought. As to, you know, why you may have a bit more of an influx of people going to DC, you know, despite the 52 promotion. And I've just got to wonder, you know, over the last few years, Marvel have had their way with the movies. And I've got to wonder if maybe, you know, some people that have been going to see all these Marvel movies, I thought, well, I wonder what else is out there. I wonder what some of these DC heroes are like that perhaps have never tried. And, you know, and I've got to wonder if maybe, you know, they've tried, you know, DC 52 because of that.
Well, it's interesting because Marvel has, whenever a character's movie has come out, they've like rebooted or started up another book. I mean, there was Thor. When Thor came out, there was a restart of one of the Thor comics. And Captain America started out with a Captain America and Bucky number one, which sounded suspiciously like Batman and Robin to me. But so, you know, Marvel is not missing that kind of thing. They, whenever a movie comes out, they do something, you know, along with it to try to promote these things. The thing I'm curious, and it's still, we talked a little bit about this last week, but I'm still fascinated that Marvel didn't really, I guess they just kind of felt if they ignored it, everybody else would. But the bad news was, I think they misjudged how this was going to hit. And so, their books are still selling well. You know, see, this is, John Lucas, this is another one of the things I really want to find out. What's the Marvel versus DC comparison going to be, for September?
Oh, totally. I imagine DC is going to be number one. You know, they may have even achieved that in August. In July, the recent numbers, they steadily gained ground, less than 10%, difference in both shares and in money coming in for the month.
You know, all this news hit in June, if I remember correctly. It was early June when all this stuff hit. And I understand, the business is such, you have to plan these things in advance. And I guess, DC has done many, try to reboots and try to relaunch type things. You know, the one year later, which Marvel pointed out during a panel at San Diego Comic-Con.
Civil War was like the last great big event they did, yeah. I think.
See, I'm just fascinated to see. I mean, going forward is going to be the thing that interests me. You know, how are people going to do? Are people going to rush in, collect issues number maybe one and maybe number two, and then say, well, that's over with, now I can go back to my real life?
Yeah, one thing that I've been wondering for a while is, because I think Marvel attempted a reboot like this quite some time ago, where they actually did renumber a lot of their comics, and then after a time, they switched back to the old numbering system.
Yeah, it was Heroes Reborn, if I remember correctly.
I'm just wondering if, after a time, this relaunch for DC starts becoming a little bit less successful, if they'll sort of like revamp back to the old numbering systems on the books.
I don't see that happening. I imagine it's just going to be like anything. The market's going to dictate what titles survive and what titles they're going to eventually. Because it's more than 52. I guess they're just doing 52 for September, but they have other new number ones coming out in like October. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to, like I said, yeah, the market's going to decide what titles are going to survive and what titles are going to drop.
You know what? One thing that interests me too, in the comparison between like Heroes Reborn and the current changes, Heroes Reborn became an object of ridicule. I mean, Peter David, there were panels he took out and he wrote dialogue and he had Captain America and his pointy knees of death kind of stuff. And so people were making fun of that Marvel reboot extensively. I don't hear that with the DC stuff. This is why I was hoping maybe Ian, you had heard stuff on the web. But the thing, I don't hear anybody saying this is a big old disaster.
The only murmurings I've heard on the web are from people that never intended to, go into the comic store and get these anyway. Mm-hmm. People that are sort of like still addicted to the Silver Age comic books that, think anything modern is just sort of like really, really bad. Mm-hmm. Oh, they can't reboot Superman. That's just wrong. Mm-hmm. Those types.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see as we go forward because, as with the first 2 weeks, DC has made a killing, in my opinion. They have done a very good job. I mean, Justice League, as you talked about last week, it's gone to a third printing. You know, I go to stores and they if there's not stacks of them there, they are trying to get more copies so they can sell more of them. So, and then this week's books, as you talked about last week also, Jean-Luc, is the fact that
Detective.
All these, the Detective and Batgirl and all these
Batgirl
ones, all
sold out
at the distributor level. So, if you're DC, you have got to be very happy with how things have gone in these first 2 weeks.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
All I can say is I'm probably going to continue on with every one of the DC titles that I've ordered so far. And that's before I've even read the next three that I've got to come my way.
Well, DC's happy to hear that, I'm sure.
It's the next two that I've got come my way. I think the only other ones that I've got on order are Demon Knights and Frankenstein Agent of Shade.
Well, let me ask you, Ian, one thing, because I know you're a big Paul Cornell fan. What was your opinion of Stormwatch?
I quite enjoyed it. It was it felt a bit frantic.
Mm-hmm.
It was very fast paced, and I actually commented on his blog. It says, "Paul, you evil man, why did you knock out Martian Manhunter at the end? That is so wrong. I'm going to give you such a tagging off for that." And then said, "Next breath, great cliffhanger."
Mr. Cornell's good at those kinds of things, so that's kind of interesting. But I'm sure he's happy. Everything I've read that he said, he's thrilled to do the two books that he's doing. So he's doing a good job. I guess we got to move on to other news and stuff. Have you got the other news, Gianluca?
Well, the big news this week was involving Action Comics number one, but it was a bit of stupid controversy going on.
Yeah.
There's basically a panel in Action number one where Superman has the words GD in a word balloon.
Yeah.
And there was a store in North Carolina called Comics Conspiracies, kind of appropriate name, but the owner of the store wanted to ban any Grant Action number one and anything Grant Morrison until he finds out what does GD stands for, because he's a Christian man, the store owner, Comics Conspiracies, and he thinks it maybe means goddamn, you know? So, surprisingly, Morrison was very tame in his response. It was a very matter-of-fact response that, and this created like a lot of controversy. I mean, because I guess he attracted a lot of attention to himself, the store owner, because, you know, Grant Morrison responded, and even before that, just a lot of people were just flooding the message boards talking about this. But Grant Morrison responds saying that it was just simply like, you know, an onomatopoeia, you know, guttural sound, you know, like any other kind of oof.
Yeah.
You know, kind of noise that, you know, that he just basically did. And then the store owner very quickly, you know, made apologies and the ban is lifted. the less than 24 hour ban of Grant Morrison stuff was lifted from the store.
I would have just told him it meant gay dildo for a mask.
Yeah, you know, it certainly did say God. It is goddamn, but you know, it's kind of crazy. Apparently, this store owner never read All-Star Batman and Robin.
Well, you know, it's funny to me because the you know, if you've read Grant Morrison's stuff, he likes guttural noises all the time. You'll see a cut and a crunch and all these nonsense words. And it reminds me very much of anime. I mean, anime does that kind of stuff. If you ever read anime, they'll have sounds. And so when I saw that, when I read the article about it, and as you obviously did, I just had to laugh because I thought, you know, we obviously haven't looked at these things because Mr. Morrison loves nothing better than doing those kinds of unusual sounds, you know, sound effects and stuff. So when I read that, I thought, you know, this is our 5 minutes of fame, basically. And I'm happy for the guy. He probably got more customers rushing in there to let him have it about Grant Morrison.
Maybe lost them. Yeah, you never know.
So I don't know.
But I wouldn't put up to Grant Morrison to make fun of God, but not in a Superman comic.
No. You know?
Just doesn't quite fit the character.
Yeah.
But I never read Super Gods, that book Grant Morrison did.
Yeah.
Maybe the comic conspiracy guy can.
You ever read Seaman?
Sea Guy.
No, I didn't read
Sea Guy.
Sea Guy.
Yeah, Sea Guy. I read that, and that was one of the like Wildstorm or Vertigo books, and it was much less mainstream in its perspective on profanity and stuff like that. So anyway, any other stuff that was of interest this week?
Oh, this weekend is SPX. It's a small press expo in Maryland. Not a whole lot of excitement. Obviously, this big week has been like the big one for DC. And I mean, we've obviously been talking about it for quite a while, so I would imagine it's a success. Yeah, and next week, there's a couple of non-good DC books coming out there on sale. There are actually some trades going out. One of them is called Blue Estate.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
Volume 1. It collects issues 1 through 4.
Cool.
And this is a really cool comic. If you like Get Shorty, Pulp Fiction, you know, it takes place in L.A. And you have, like, a cast of some interesting characters. Some of them shady, like Russian mobsters, you know, B-movie action stars, detectives, the police. It all ties together, kind of like I said, in a Pulp Fiction kind of way. But it's very entertaining. You have art changes throughout each issue, which happens based on, I guess, like the storyline or the plot thread going on. So you have four different artists, and the covers are gorgeous. And I've seen the paperback trade of this, and there's a lot of good extras in this. And you get like a cover gallery, which the covers are amazing. The other kind of a companion book to it. It's from like the same creator, and this book is a bit older, but it's coming out in paperback for the first time. But it's called Ferone. And by the way, all three of these books are from Image Comics. But the second book is called Ferone. Victor Kalvachev, who does Blue Estate, he is the sole like writer and artist on it, and it's also very good. It's a woman who kind of has Amnesia doesn't know who she is, but she's kind of a trained killer type person. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a bit of noir mystery in a way, in action. So that's a good book. And then finally, the third book of the non-DC titles next week is called Moriarty. It's from Image Comics. Daniel Corey is the writer for it. And then this one guy, Ducidu, is like the artist. But it takes place like 20 years after Sherlock Holmes' death.
I've seen the YouTube trailer for that, and it looks really good.
Yeah, you know, I definitely recommend people check this out. This collects issues 1-4 of it's an ongoing series, Moriarty. I guess in October will be issue 5, which will be a whole new story arc. But this collects like the story arc for issues 1-4. And if you like Sherlock Holmes, if you kind of like historical fiction, there's a bit of science fiction, science in the story too. I definitely, you know, recommend picking that up as well.
So the second one was Faerun, you said?
Faerun, yeah. You have Blue Estate and Faerun, which I kind of like kind of linked together because they both have the same writer and artist on board for that.
Because you turned me on to Blue Estate, which I really liked, and I'm going to go after Faerun, I think, because I enjoyed that. Those are great books.
It was originally in heavy metal, Faerun.
Really?
Yeah, and it was in a two issues, and Image had a while ago released a hardcover version. I don't know if they still have copies of that available, but now there's going to be a paperback. So.
Cool. Well, I might go after the hardcover because the local shop, one of the ones I go to, has a really nice collection of trades and hardcovers and things like that, so they might have it. So I'll have to check with them. But I always like when I hear something, when I hear something is good, I tend to want to go after it and try to find out for myself. And so I appreciate knowing any of those good suggestions. So thanks.
No problem. As far as DC books, the one I'm looking forward to the most next week is Batwoman. Mm-hmm. And man, I've been waiting long for this book. This book was supposed to come out in February of this year. It kept getting pushed back. They added a co-writer for J.H. Williams III. But J.H. Williams III is still the sole artist on the book. And I'm looking forward to it, you know, kind of seeing where they take the Batwoman character now that Greg Rucka is not writing for it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Ian, have you got any news that you want to share with us?
Not really, no.
Okay. All right. And you've covered a little bit of previews. How about as far as previews go? Ian, have you got anything that's coming out this week that you're looking forward to?
I'd say Frankenstein Agent of Shade is one I'm looking forward to this week.
Okay.
It's just such a, you know, cracking title. I've never read a Frankenstein comic, and I'm just curious to see what they do with this, where it goes. It's, you know, it's just a title when I was reading down DC and this, it just it just got me curious, and I thought, well, I've got to try some of that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. There's a lot of DC stuff. Let's see. The basic last week, John Luke, you gave his whole big list. So let me go ahead and this time I'll do it this week.
Go ahead.
There's Batman and Robin, number one. Of course, you mentioned Batwoman. Deathstroke, which will be interesting to see. And then, of course, Mr. Cornell's Demon Knights. As you mentioned, Ian, Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. Green Lantern with Sinestro as the main character. That's going to be interesting. Then there's Grifter, Legion Lost, Mr. Terrific. And another Green Lantern family book called Red Lanterns is going to be out. And we've got this sci-fi book that's called Resurrection Man. I'm going to be fascinated about that. I don't know much about it, and so I'm kind of intrigued to see what it looks like. And then we've got Suicide Squad and the new Superboy. So those are all the ones that are coming out this week. So there's a lot. It looks like the same number as last week, roughly. So this will be the first, by the way, of the Legions. There's two Legion books, the Legion of Superheroes and Legion Lost. It's interesting they're putting Legion Lost out before Legion of Superheroes, which comes out the week after. But this looks like a big week. This looks like it's going to be a lot of interesting things. A lot of Bat Family books in that sense. Yeah. Mr. Terrific is the one that's probably going to be the most curious to see, because that I've seen like a panel of it, and it looks intriguing. They're trying to enhance, like they had Static Shock this past week. They're trying to put out more black or African-American characters. And Batwing, of course, was also black. So I'm going to be curious to see how this goes. But I'm also really anxious about Demon Knights, because I think that Mr. Cornell does a wonderful job of storytelling. I really was impressed with Stormwatch, so I'm going to be fascinated to see how he does Demon Knights as well. Anything else we need to talk about before we call it quits?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, well, maybe we'll have a little shorter one this week, but that's fine by me. We got a lot of stuff that we covered, so that's pretty good. All right, thanks, you guys, and we'll be back next week to talk some more. And that's a wrap for the 27th episode of Wayne's Comics. Be sure to tune in next week when I'll have an interview with Joe Harris from Oni Press's Spontaneous comic, which I really like. He has some good insights onto that book. And if all things work out well, I hope to have an interview with Scott Snyder about the upcoming Batman comic from DC. Being a big old Batman fan, I'm really looking forward to that. But until next time, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.